So if you really want to understand just how upside down the global economy is right now, I want you to consider this scenario. Imagine you have a product and 34 million people pay you a monthly subscription for it.
Right, which sounds like an absolute gold mine.
Exactly. I mean, most companies would absolutely kill for 34 million recurring customers, right? But for Microsoft's Xbox division, that exact scenario has somehow turned into this staggering financial disaster.
Yeah, it completely breaks all the conventional wisdom of the tech industry. I mean, we've been taught for, what, a decade now that subscriptions are the holy grail of revenue. But as these new numbers show, scale just doesn't always equal survival.
And that is exactly what we are dissecting today. We've got this stack of reports from the July 2026 Tick and Knight news cycle, and they cover industries that on the surface seem entirely disconnected. I mean,
Yeah.
we are looking at sweeping shifts in the video game market, this catastrophic fallout from European financial regulators, and escalating tactical combat drills in low Earth orbit.
Yeah, and like you said, on the surface, a handheld video game console has literally nothing to do with cryptocurrency laws or, military satellites. But when you really look at the mechanics behind these events, the exact same overarching crisis is driving all of them.
And that is our mission for this deep dive. We are going to look past these individual headlines to uncover the narrative through line. We're exploring how rigid regulations, fundamentally broken business models, and rising geopolitical tensions are forcing titans in like every single sector to completely rewrite their rule books from scratch or, face extinction. So, okay, let's unpack this, starting with a massive shockwave in the gaming industry. Nintendo just announced they are pulling all current Switch models, the original, the Lite, and the OLED, out of Europe by February 2027.
Which is just an astonishing move when you remember they have sold over 146 million of these units globally. I mean, this isn't some flop struggling to find shelf space.
It's one of the best-selling consoles ever.
Exactly. It is a wildly successful product, colliding headfirst with a new European Union law. The EU is now mandating that electronic devices must feature user-replaceable batteries to cut down on e-waste.
And I mean, the intent there makes total sense on paper, right? They want you to be able to just pop the back off your device, swap the dead battery, and avoid an expensive trip to some repair center.
Sure, yeah.
But instead of redesigning the Switch to comply with that, Nintendo is just, they're walking away. They're executing what industry analysts are calling a controlled exit, basically clearing the board ahead of the fully compliant Switch 2 launch in summer 2026.
Yeah, and you really have to understand the engineering reality to see why they're walking away. Making a battery replaceable isn't just about, removing some industrial glue.
Oh, really?
No, not at all. You have to add this thick physical protective casing around the lithium-ion cell so a consumer doesn't accidentally puncture it with a screwdriver and start a fire.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. And adding that casing adds bulk. That means completely redesigning the internal motherboard layout to fit it, which then entirely alters the thermal dynamics and the cooling system of the console.
So they would be spending, what, tens of millions of dollars in R&D to re-engineer a 9-year-old device just for one single market?
Precisely. It makes zero economic sense.
Yeah.
So they are executing a highly calculated retreat. I mean, they avoid a messy scramble. They use the EU regulation as this sort of convenient excuse to clear out old inventory across the Americas and Asia. And they let Europe serve as a blank slate for their next generation.
It kind of reminds me of that old military strategy, burning the bridge behind your own troops to force the army to march forward. Like, it's aggressive, but it's completely on their own terms.
Yeah, which is the ultimate luxury in business. And that luxury becomes painfully obvious when you contrast Nintendo's calculated exit with the absolute chaos unfolding over at Xbox. Because Microsoft isn't executing a controlled exit at all. They are in the middle of a frantic emergency evacuation.
Yeah.
The numbers coming out of Xbox are just brutal. I mean, 3,200 layoffs, that wipes out 20% of their entire division.
It's staggering.
And they are shedding four major studios. Ninja Theory, Undead Labs, Double Fine, and Compulsion Games are either being sold off or spun out into independent entities.
And the new CEO, Asha Sharma, she didn't even try to sugarcoat it. Her internal memo just bluntly stated, quote, "Our business is not healthy," admitting they spread themselves far too thin.
Which is wild.
Yeah, I mean, that level of candor from a Microsoft executive, it's practically unheard of.
But wait, I need to push back on this, going back to my point at the very start of the show. Xbox Game Pass. has 34 million subscribers. Even if they are just paying the base tier, that is literally hundreds of millions of dollars flowing in every single month. Why is this an anchor dragging them down to the point of firing a fifth of their workforce? Because it exposes the fatal flaw of trying to build the Netflix of gaming. The math simply does not translate from television to video games. I mean, if you subscribe to a movie platform, you might watch 10 different things in a month.
Right, you bounce around.
Exactly. The platform keeps you engaged with cheap, diverse content. But gamers behave differently. A player might spend 150 hours over 3 months playing a single sprawling RPG.
Oh, I see. So they pay maybe $45 in subscription fees for those 3 months instead of buying the game outright at retail for $70. So Microsoft loses that revenue delta.
Yes, but it's actually much worse than just the lost retail sales. Microsoft pays astronomical upfront fees to third-party developers just to get those games onto the service in the first place.
Yeah.
Plus, the infrastructure costs for the cloud streaming are just staggering. Industry insiders calculate that Microsoft is actually losing roughly $200 to $300 per Game Pass subscriber every single year.
Wait, really? So they are essentially subsidizing millions of players to the tune of billions of dollars annually. That is mind-boggling.
It is. And when you run those numbers across the entire division, you are looking at estimated profit margins for Xbox sitting somewhere between 1.2% and 4%.
Wow.
Yeah, contrast that with Nintendo, which operates at about a 25% profit margin by just, you know, selling hardware and software the traditional way. You just cannot sustain sub 4% margins inside a sprawling tech conglomerate.
And the collateral damage is sweeping. I mean, look at Arcane Lyon, the French studio developing that highly anticipated Marvel's Blade game. Because France has incredibly strict labor laws, the studio is trapped in this mandatory consultation process right now.
Right. They can't just fire everyone overnight.
Exactly. So they are essentially in bureaucratic limbo. The game is delayed to late 2027, and if the studio gets sold off, Xbox might lose the exclusive rights to the game entirely.
Which severely cripples their ability to compete with Sony's PlayStation. It perfectly illustrates how a flawed, dogmatic business model at the executive level eventually just starves the creative talent at the foundation.
So Nintendo has the luxury of walking away from strict European regulations because their core hardware business is completely sound. But while they are retreating, Europe's heavy regulatory hand is actively destroying companies in other sectors who just can't afford to pack up and leave, which perfectly bridges us into the crisis unfolding in the European financial sector right now.
Yeah, we are seeing a nearly identical dynamic playing out in the cryptocurrency market. The catalyst here is Make of the Markets and Crypto Assets Regulation. It is this sweeping, comprehensive legal framework the EU designed to regulate digital currencies and, you know, shield consumers from volatility and fraud.
Right. And the transition deadline hit on July 1st, 2026. The stats from these reports are genuinely devastating. Out of 3,000 active crypto companies operating within the European Union, only 210 successfully secured licenses. I mean, that is just 7% of the entire market.
Which means 93% of those businesses are legally required to just halt operations or completely abandon the continent.
Yeah.
I mean, Binance, the largest exchange on the planet, withdrew its application in Greece and severely restricted services for European users.
Yeah, their CEO publicly warned that the inconsistent enforcement across the 27 member states is causing profound market fragmentation. It's almost like building the safest, most pristine playground on Earth, but setting the entrance fee so unimaginably high that the neighborhood kids just go play in traffic instead.
That is a perfect analogy. And what's fascinating here is that this perfectly illustrates the regulatory paradox. Regulators demanded incredibly complex technical documentation. They required staggering initial capital reserves and continuous intense security audits.
Which sounds good in theory.
Right. They engineered a system for absolute safety, which is a noble goal, but they completely ignored the reality of startup economics.
Yeah, a 20-person startup doesn't have an army of compliance lawyers on retainer to navigate 27 different national bureaucracies.
Exactly. And because they can't afford the entrance fee, the innovation and the capital don't just vanish. They migrate. We are seeing a massive brain drain as these startups relocate to jurisdictions with more progressive, flexible frameworks like Singapore or the UAE. But the most critical part of this paradox is what happens to the consumers.
Right. The 15 million crypto users inside the EU, They aren't going to just stop trading because the local startup got shut down.
No, of course they don't, because they can no longer access licensed local platforms. They are basically forced to transfer their assets to offshore, entirely unregulated platforms just to participate in the market.
Which completely defeats the fundamental purpose of the legislation. I mean, they wrote the law to protect consumers from scams, but by being so rigidly dogmatic, they inadvertently pushed 15 million citizens into the shadows where they have zero legal recourse if a platform steals their money.
Exactly. By demanding absolute compliance, they crushed their own local industry and statistically increased the risk for their citizens. It just proves that applying rigid, one-size-fits-all dogma to a rapidly evolving technology almost always generates the exact opposite of the intended effect.
Well, while European regulators are stubbornly gripping their dogma as their local market collapses, institutional investors on the other side of the planet are realizing that unquestioning loyalty to an ideology is actually incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, survival in high finance requires pragmatism. If the landscape shifts, your ideology has to shift right along with it.
Which brings us to a historic moment from Strategy, Inc. On July 6, 2026, Michael Saylor's company shocked the market. I mean, they are famous for being the ultimate Bitcoin zealots, right? They championed OJDL culture, holding on for dear life, never selling a single Satoshi. Their entire corporate identity was built on never cashing out.
Right.
But then they sold 3,588 Bitcoin for $216 million.
And predictably, the internet rumor mill immediately shifted into overdrive.
Oh, the forums were absolutely spiraling. Analysts were claiming there was a 15% likelihood that Strategy was entirely abandoning its crypto thesis. The headlines were screaming about how the company reported $8.31 billion in unrealized losses for the second quarter.
Yeah.
Which sounds catastrophic to a casual observer. So, are they bleeding cash? Or is this just an accounting quirk causing a panic?
It is entirely an accounting quirk, and we really need to unpack that jargon to debunk the panic. Unrealized losses simply means the price of Bitcoin dropped compared to what they initially bought it for, so their portfolio looks smaller on paper.
Okay.
But they haven't actually locked in a financial loss because they haven't sold the bulk of it. It's like the estimated value of your house dropping during a recession. You know,
yeah.
You don't actually lose money unless you sell the house that day.
Okay, so if they aren't panicking over paper losses, why did they break their golden rule and sell the $216 million worth?
The reports highlight they actually needed the funds to pay dividends on preferred securities.
Meaning they have high-tier VIP investors who are legally owed regular payouts. And you obviously can't pay those investors in internet ideology or digital tokens. They demand actual liquid cash.
Exactly. You have to look at the broader math here. Yes, they sold a chunk of Bitcoin, but they still hold 843,775 Bitcoin in their treasury. That remaining portfolio is worth approximately $54 billion.
Wow, okay. So a $216 million sale is basically couch change to them.
Yeah, it represents less than 0.4% of their total holdings. And the broader market recognized this immediately, too. I mean, Bitcoin dipped below $63,000 briefly, but the market absorbed the sale and entirely recovered in just 4 hours.
So this isn't a retreat at all.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's a sign of market maturation. We are basically watching institutions pivot from zealous HODL culture to strategic adult asset management. Companies are realizing they need flexibility. They have to tap into their reserves for operational liquidity without abandoning their long-term thesis. Strategy, Inc. didn't lose faith in crypto. They just learned how to behave like a mature financial institution managing a highly volatile asset.
They adapted their rulebook to survive, which is the exact pragmatism that Xbox and European regulators completely failed to grasp. Now, we've spent this time watching terrestrial borders, European laws, and earthly financial markets force these sprawling pivots. But what happens when global powers take these high-stakes chess matches into an environment with zero borders, zero regulations, and zero gravity?
You enter the most volatile and dangerous arena in modern geopolitics.
Because on the very same day Strategy Inc. sold its Bitcoin, July 6, 2026, the United States Space Force conducted a highly classified mission dubbed Victus Haze.
Yeah, this was a critical component of the Tactically Responsive Space Program. And the mechanics of this drill are sobering. They essentially launched two satellites and pitted them against each other in a live orbital combat simulation.
The reports mention they used RPO, rendezvous, and proximity operations. For those of us who aren't rocket scientists, what does that actually look like?
Think of it as high-speed, three-dimensional tailgating in orbit. These satellites approach each other, stalk one another, create distance, and execute incredibly precise tactical maneuvers while traveling at, you know, thousands of miles per hour.
And the geopolitical context here explains why this is suddenly such a massive priority. Space used to be a relatively peaceful domain, primarily focused on scientific research and telecommunications. But recently, China has launched several satellites exhibiting highly suspicious maneuverable capability satellites that can theoretically grab or disable other assets.
And Russia escalated things even further. In 2025, they conducted a reckless anti-satellite test where they deliberately blew up one of their own defunct satellites just to prove they could. So Space Force is using Victus Haze to demonstrate that the U.S. can match these capabilities, that they have the agility to approach, neutralize, or defend critical infrastructure in orbit on a moment's notice.
Here's where it gets really interesting and, frankly, deeply unsettling. The reports bring up the Kessler syndrome. When I try to visualize this, I picture a cosmic game of billiards. You know how when you hit the cue ball into the rack, the balls scatter in every direction?
Yeah.
Imagine a break that shatters the balls into millions of jagged pieces flying at 17,000 miles per hour. And every time one of those pieces hits another satellite, that target shatters into a million more bullets. Why is this considered an existential threat to modern humanity?
Because there is no friction or air resistance in space to slow those bullets down. The Kessler syndrome describes a catastrophic, cascading chain reaction of space debris. If a satellite is destroyed, whether by a deliberate missile strike from a nation state or just an accidental collision, during one of these complex cat-and-mouse RPO maneuvers, it explodes into thousands of fragments.
And those fragments just keep orbiting the Earth indefinitely.
Exactly, traveling at hypersonic speeds. Eventually, a piece of that shrapnel hits another satellite, destroying it, which creates thousands of new fragments. It triggers an unstoppable exponential cloud of destruction. If orbital militarization goes wrong, it won't just be a localized political conflict. The sheer density of the debris could render low Earth orbit completely impenetrable and unusable for generations.
I want you, listening right now, to think about how helpless you feel when your home Wi-Fi drops out for an hour. Now imagine you step outside and GPS is permanently gone. Global supply chains freeze because cargo ships can't navigate. International banking networks collapse because they rely on satellite timestamps for high-frequency trading. Weather observation satellites tracking hurricanes are totally wiped out.
Yeah, the entire invisible infrastructure that props up the modern digital world would be shredded by an impenetrable cloud of shrapnel. Victus Haze proves the U.S. has the tactical capability for space warfare, but it also exposes the extreme fragility of the domain. In space, an aggressive chess move doesn't just capture an opponent's piece. It risks flipping the entire board so violently that no one can ever play the game again.
So what does this all mean? Taking a step back, whether you're a gamer who just lost access to your favorite portable console, a startup founder trying to navigate a fractured European market, or just an everyday person relying on your phone's satellite navigation to get to work, these reports prove we are rapidly exiting yesterday's world. The ground is shifting under every major industry.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, in times of systemic reset, survival absolutely requires abandoning old dogmas. I mean, Nintendo recognized the regulatory writing on the wall and completely retreated to prepare for their next generation. Strategy Inc. abandoned its zero-cell ideology to maintain corporate health and appease its investors. But meanwhile, Xbox and European regulators are struggling immensely because they clung to flawed, rigid models long after the math stopped working.
And that brings us to a final thought I want you to mull over after this finishes. If sweeping, inflexible regulations like the EU's battery mandates or the MiCA crypto laws are forcing massive tech and finance giants to simply abandon entire continents, are we heading toward a fractured future? A future where your access to technology, finance, and digital culture is entirely dictated by your geographic zip code rather than the globally connected internet we grew up with?
It raises a really important question about whether the borderless digital utopia we were promised is already being partitioned into heavily guarded walled gardens.
The pressure has snapped, the landscape has radically shifted, and the new borders being drawn aren't just on terrestrial maps, they are inside our devices, woven into our financial systems, and orbiting in the sky above us. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.